This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, we'll hear about Interfaith Business Builders. The organization develops community-based, employee-owned and operated co-ops in low-income communities. But first, the discussion over income and wealth inequality in our country has increased dramatically since the recession in 2008. Economics of Compassion of Greater Cincinnati is a recently formed initiative seeking to create a sustainable, resilient, more inclusive economy for all citizens, especially for those individuals who are on the margins of our current economic system. Here to explain the initiative are Sister Monica McGloin, a Dominican Sister of Hope who is active with the Cincinnati Interfaith Committee for Worker Justice and is a member of Economics of Compassion's Jubilee Circle, Father Rob Rhodes from Christ Church Cathedral, also a member of Jubilee Circle, and Tim Krause, chair of Interfaith Business Builders Board of Trustees and a convener for the Economics of Compassion Initiative. You can join our conversation today at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good afternoon, everybody. Good to see all of you.
Good to see you.
Tim, what initially sparked the interest in launching the Economics of Compassion Initiative?
Well, I think you said it pretty well here in the very beginning. The economic collapse of 2008 had a tremendous impact on communities and individuals in America, and particularly in Cincinnati. And that caused many, many people to start thinking differently about how we relate to the economy. And we already know that Cincinnati has suffered tremendously from that 2008 collapse. We have a higher than average poverty rate in the city. We have the second highest poverty rate of children in the country. And there are many people inside faith communities and other organizations who recognize the fact that this is something we needed to talk about. We need to raise consciousness about what's happening in our communities, and then we also need to take responsibility and try to find solutions that are more locally based, community based, because we realize policy changes take a lot of work, and we're going to work on those policy changes, but if we want to have impact now, we need to do it now.
So, Tim, who's the inspiration for the ideas about creating this more compassionate economy?
Well, this started as a series of conversations that were initiated by Christ Church Cathedral in their Trinity Institute, and then also follow-ups to that with theologian Walter Brueggemann, who is one of the most prolific Old Testament theologians in America, and a business consultant by the name of Peter Block. And Peter has also been doing a lot of community work himself and trying to figure out what makes viable communities. And so Peter and Walter had this dialogue about what's happening in our economy and how can we become a more compassionate community, and how can we insert compassion into an economy that has not been very compassionate.
Monica, can you give me some examples that perhaps you've seen in your own neighborhood that points to why there's a need for an initiative like this in Cincinnati?
Well, yes. I mean, the fact that we have people who have so little. We have people who they can't afford beds for their children. They can't afford sufficient food for the month. We have many people who work full time and are still eligible for public assistance, are still eligible for food stamps. And so when we see that, and yet we continue to allow the myth to continue that the reason people are poor is because they don't work hard enough, we realize that there's something really seriously absent in our community. And that, as far as when we were talking, it seemed to be compassion, that we've moved from being people who have compassionate hearts, who realize that we are our brother and sister's keepers, that we do have to care about one another, to a society where a few times a year we give people gifts so we can relieve our guilt, and the rest of the year we expect people to work for, you know, really it's like slave labor. And when we talked about Walter Brueggemann, you know, his presentation, He brought us back to the Exodus and how, you know, people were into this mentality of the Pharaoh that everything was scarce and there'll never be enough, and how that leads then to this greed and the creation of slavery. and fear that if we don't keep storing up our stuff, we'll all be poor. And how really the slaves had to have the courage to move into the desert and to leave behind this. So we, as we talked about that, we said, well, how do we really clear our heads? How do we let go of this myth that, you know, it's all right for some people to be poor while other people are amassing wealth? And how can we just be complacent in the face of that? So that's when we said, well, we have to start a movement where we talk about how do we create a new way of economic relations that does stress compassion, not profit.
So we're a bit too much of a me generation is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, it is that, the me generation, but it's also this idea that we're expected to believe that there's nothing we can do about the economy and that it's all right that some people have far more than they will ever need or ever use. And we have other people who are desperately poor. And it's all right to blame them and not look, you know, the work I've been involved in community health over the years, I know that people with resources have the same issues that people who are poor have. But if you have resources, you can cover them up. You can get help. You can go away for 3 months and be taken care of. Whereas if you're poor, you wind up living on the streets. You wind up dying in the streets. You wind up going and eating in the soup kitchen because you don't have any other option. But the problems are the same.
Rob, what about you? What are some examples that you've seen that point to the need for this program?
Well, I always go back to personal experience and family history. I grew up in a working class neighborhood in St. Louis. My dad was a factory worker on assembly line at Chrysler, UAW, and most of my family was either worked on the assembly line or worked on the docks, Yellow Freight in St. Louis, so Teamsters, UAW. And I remember even as a kid, after the union started getting broken down, Ronald Reagan is a scary figure for my family because of that. And being afraid every year, my parents were divorced, that my dad was going to have to move because the plant would shut down and I wouldn't see him again. So that was this sort of constant concern in my household. But I've also seen, you know, over the following generation, those factory jobs are gone, the dock jobs are, you know, fewer and fewer, and those kind of the jobs that you could count on if you were not college educated are mostly gone. And now we're watching that could provide a living. And now we're watching, even if you have a college education, those jobs are disappearing. And on top of that, many folks are saddled with student loan debt. I'm just paying mine off from seminary myself. So I'm very aware that this economy is not set up for most of the people who are living in it. It's set up for the people who are running it and benefiting from it. And that's just made me very aware of what I would call the idol of the free hand of the market. That is a god that does not care about people. And we want to do the work of the god who cares about people.
What have you seen in Cincinnati neighborhoods, Rob, that point to a need for this?
Well, I work downtown, you know, at the cathedral, and I mean, you know, we have 5,000 Club. We feed 200 people every Tuesday night, and these are people that I walk the streets, and so I know many of them, and all, you know, just hang around downtown, and instead of ignoring the people who are holding up the signs, stop and talk to them, and that's what I would recommend rather than me answering the question. I would say ask them the question and hear their story. It's out there.
I think another thing that's happening with the Economics of Compassion initiative is that we want to raise consciousness about what's really, truly happening in our economy and society, because we do feel that we're living under an illusion, and that illusion of American exceptionalism, this notion that we really are the best society in the world. And we're finding that more and more people are not achieving that American dream that is being put out there by American exceptionalism. So we also want to raise the consciousness about that, but we want to try to do something about it. And we want to engage people in conversations and communities of how can you, at the grassroots level, make a substantive change in the way people relate to each other economically? How can we build economic structures that support people rather than working against them? How can we invest in neighborhoods so that money doesn't get taken out of those neighborhoods, but the money stays in those neighborhoods so that we're working against that extraction process? So we're promoting economic initiatives like the building of cooperative businesses, doing time sharing and banking, working at other enterprises that could actually build up a community and create affordable housing and a more livable situation for people who are actually living in misery right now.
Tim, it sounds like part of the idea is to take more economic control back to the local level.
Exactly.
Right. In fact, I'd want to add to that. I mean, the question is, and not everybody's in agreement about this, but we're looking at alternative economy. So we don't want to go back to Pharaoh's economy, going back to that metaphor, that we're going through the desert. We're looking for the promised land. We're not looking to go back to the economics of scarcity. So we don't want to just get people more comfortable in the economy that we have. We think the economy that we have is the problem.
We'll continue our conversation about the economics of compassion, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests, as we talk about the Economics of Compassion Initiative, are Sister Monica McGloin, Father Rob Rhodes, and Tim Krause. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Monica, what makes Cincinnati an ideal place for this type of initiative? Do we have the support structures out there for making these kinds of changes?
Well, I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. I don't know if we have the support structures, but I think we have a sufficient number of people who cut across all levels who have an interest in doing this and really want to pursue it. Because this movement, I think, as Tim said earlier, it started many years back. It started with people who had an interest, went to a presentation by Walter Brueggemann, and kept meeting and kept saying, well, what are we going to do with this? And so, and the meetings we've had at Christ Church Cathedral have been very well attended, and people continue to follow up. So I think there's a high level of interest. And I think we also are structured in a way that maybe being these neighborhoods, we have an opportunity to meet with different groups in different areas, and there's some common interests that people can build on.
Rob, how will the initiative be reaching out to existing leaders and groups to get the business community involved and to get community leaders more involved in this kind of thing?
That's an ongoing process. Tim can probably answer this better than I can, but it's an ongoing process. Peter Block is all about building coalitions and getting people involved. So all of us through our various, and we're all part of many different organizations and have people in congregations and that sort of thing. We just keep reaching out to people.
One of the things we've realized for many years is that Cincinnati is a caring community. There are many, many people who want to do differently with things. They want to see communities thrive. They want to see opportunity exist for people. You can witness the outpouring of support for Millville community after the Inquirer did its story about the children at the Ethel Taylor School. That scenario at Ethel Taylor is being repeated in schools all over Cincinnati area, where people are seeing the need and they're responding to it. And I think one of the things that the economic ECI initiative is trying to do is to give people a place where they can take their caring and actually put their money and their energy to work in making a better world for people. And so we provide an inventory for enterprise, social enterprises that exist in different communities that are making a difference, how to get involved in affordable housing efforts, how to create a renter's co-op, how to create a business cooperative, how to do something that will benefit the community directly and help to keep investment in that community.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's talk with Elliot in Mount Healthy. Hi, Elliot.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if the guests would talk about any plans to empower residents of lower-income communities with helping them obtain mentoring or business licenses and or funding for potential business opportunities just to help cultivate the local economy?
It's a very good question, and I think that there are opportunities for that. One organization that I've been involved with that we'll be talking about later in the program, Interfaith Business Builders, is that we actually work with low-income communities and helping those communities to set up a cooperative business so people can actually own that business and learn how to run that business. There are other things that we're trying to do. We're working with existing community organizations to carry on this conversation of how can we recreate what's really good about our communities and support each other. And some of this is through social enterprises and the creation of local businesses that are locally controlled.
Do you work with local incubators and accelerators in town to accomplish any of this?
Well, we're looking for ways to access the capital that those local incubators have. We're seeing ECI as itself as an organization that can point people in a direction to if you have investment that you would like to make in a community, particularly if you want to make an investment that's not going to get a lot of return, financial interest return, then we can point you to organizations that are doing that. And so the notion of slow capital or social capital, as we call it, is a very important concept in how communities can develop. Encouraging people to get involved with credit unions, because credit unions make small loans to people to help them get started.
Now, you talked, Tim, about one of the first goals being to get a dialogue going, engaging people in a dialogue mm-hmm. about making these changes. What are some of the other goals that you, all the panelists here, can you tell me what the other goals are that you want to accomplish? I think it's in the next 4 years is your mm-hmm. plan length.
Well, Monica? I think primarily it is at this stage we're trying to engage people in conversations, because one of the first steps is to acknowledge that what is happening isn't really working. And it's not working for the common good. It's not working for all of us. It's working for some people. So you have to first recognize that, and then to begin to explore what are some alternatives. Now, things like that I might decide to lend you money and not charge you interest. Now, if I were to talk to some people about that, financial advisors, they would say, well, that's not a good idea. And in fact, when we move,
this is not about financial, though.
No,
is this?
It's not. It's about how do we rebuild the kind of spirit that really created that what we see in all our documents as America. What we say we want, you know, we want everybody to have a fair chance, and some of the movements over the years. Well, the unions that we talked about, all of these things have been ways of letting us all share in the benefits. But we see with the inequity that's not happening anymore. So how do we rebuild that? First of all, it's almost rekindling a thirst to be that kind of people, and then to really help us to understand, help one another to understand that we can make the changes. We don't have to just get permission from, like I say, a financial advisor or somebody. We can do things differently, and that's how we were created.
One thing that's happening on a national level that we would love to see happen locally is the issue of debt forgiveness. Mm-hmm. There's an organization nationally called Rolling Jubilee.
Oh, this is the Jubilee Year concept.
Okay. Right, and they are buying up debt on the secondary debt market and then forgiving that debt. They have purchased $700,000 worth of debt that translated into becoming about $32 million of debt when they buy it for pennies on the dollar. And then they notify those debtors that their debts have been forgiven and then ask them to join the movement to try to forgive other debts. 77% of the households in America are living in debt. This is not something that is just a small number of people who are faced with debt. The student debt that we're looking at is $1.2 trillion, which is the next big bubble that we're all looking at in the economy that could cause another crash. Many of those students have more than paid back the principal on the loans that they took out. But the way the debt is structured, they are going to be indebted or enslaved to that debt for the rest of their lives. Why not figure out a way to forgive that debt? Why not figure out a way to help people get out from under that burden? 62% of the bankruptcies in America are caused by medical debt. Those kinds of things are really a burden on the American population. And so we're looking at this as a way to actually focus on a grassroots level, but also think very, very large about what's happening at the national level, too.
Rob, the idea of Jubilee, it's biblically based, isn't it? Comes from the Bible, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's whenever you raise the issue of Jubilee, the response is almost always, well, this was never really practiced anywhere. And that's not totally true. It has been practiced on some level through history, is still practiced in some level in Israel today. But even if it hasn't been fully practiced, that makes it about the same as every other thing that we've been called to do by God. And it doesn't mean it's a thing to ignore. And essentially, it is about forgiving debts every 7 years. And it's about release of slaves. And it's been called by some people a regularly scheduled revolution, and it is designed, I think, by God to keep anybody from becoming too rich or anybody from becoming too poor.
What's the next Jubilee year?
The next Jubilee year for the United States, mm-hmm. which would mark 400 years of slavery in the United States, is 2019. The first slaves arrived in 1619, and by 2019, we would hope that in Cincinnati we could have enough of a dialogue that we could begin a conversation citywide on how we're going to create a Jubilee year in 2019.
Monica, how realistic is it that we can make all these changes in Cincinnati?
Well, I believe it is. We can, but but it's up to us to do it. And I think one of the things that it takes is some imagination, because we've learned to live within the structures that were created that worked for a long time. But now that they're not working, it's that sense that, can we imagine something different? Can we together imagine another way?
Yeah, I'd like to tag off that and say we have really funny ideas about what is realistic and what isn't realistic. I mean, there are scientists working on unlocking the gene so people can live forever. There are people, in a decade, maybe you can buy an airplane ticket and go into orbit on a plane. But somehow we say you want to tweak the economy a little bit or make a little change in the economy. That's somehow impossible. And I think we need to really I think this is what ECI is about. We need to sort of crack open people's imagination about what's possible.
Tim, you have a newsletter or a website where people can get more information?
The Economics of Compassion can be reached at econ. It's right in front of me here. Here we go. econofcompassion.org. So that's econofcompassion.org, and that does have a list of an inventory of all of the community efforts that are going on currently inside Cincinnati, and it's quite an impressive list of community organizations that are making a difference in people's lives on a grassroots level.
Do you have any events coming up for the public where they can learn more?
We do. In September 24th, we are going to have another meeting, general meeting with Peter Block and Walter Brueggemann, talking about the economics of compassion. And then in November, on November 17th and 18th, we're bringing in an organization called Neighborhood Economics to look at ways that social capital can make a difference in investing in neighborhoods so that the investment stays in those neighborhoods.
Monica, Rob, and Tim, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Sister Monica McGloin, a Dominican Sister of Hope who's active with the Cincinnati Interfaith Committee for Worker Justice and is a member of Economics of Compassion's Jubilee Circle. Father Rob Rhodes from Christ Church Cathedral, also a member of the Jubilee Circle. And Tim Krause, Chair of Interfaith Business Builders Board of Trustees and a convener for the Economics of Compassion Initiative.